Rolling.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's another episode of Hashtag Goals. It's your girl, Danielle Victoria. I'm here with Kenyo. We've got a special, special, special guest, Antonio Polanco. I say it right?
Oh, man, you took it bad. That's the legit name.
I didn't even say Tony. I said Antonio. I got to put some respect on this man's name.
I appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Tony.
What's good?
What's good? What's been up?
Man, trying to get this to happen. I'm glad we finally got this happening and we got this interview coming. So I just been working, you know. I've been doing my No Mosh Challenge, courtesy of Mr. Composition.
Yeah, shout out to the MC who writes fiction.
Yeah, so I just been working, putting in work, doing videos, No More Itinerary. And trying to work on music, trying to at least.
Yeah.
We're getting you busy.
We're getting you on a feature of some Kenyo songs.
Definitely, all my friends are CEOs. Remix coming soon.
All my friends are CEOs because we all actually are all CEOs who are sitting here right now. I have Mr. Composition, who's over here, who looks like Lloyd. I have Kenyo, who looks like Idris Elba for Halloween. Me, who looks like Danielle, and I have Antonio.
Yeah, what's good? What's good?
Okay, so today, are you going to talk, Kenyo?
What's up, guys?
So today, we're doing a special podcast because the really cool thing about Tony is he is kind of in the middle of like what we're dealing with in our nation right now. He's had a family member that's been deported when he was younger, and he also works with immigration lawyers. So we wanted to get his take on like how it was when you were growing up, seeing your father being deported, and how you feel about what's happening with ICE and, you know, the Trump, you know, the whole thing that Trump is trying to do as far as like close all the borders. So let's take it back to when you were a kid and your dad was deported.
Oh, man.
How was that?
That was like right around the time of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little kid. I didn't even think about immigration.
How old were you?
I was literally like 12, about to hit 13.
Yeah.
And I remember that year, I think it was 2001 turning 2002. And that year just had so many events. I remember like,
I think for everybody, it was just like a crazy year.
We just got done with 2K because some people was like, wait,
oh yeah,
2000, the world was going to change and all that.
We thought the world was going to, no, I thought the world was going to end.
People was like, it's going to end, it's going to return backwards.
Y2K.
Yeah, so that was a whole trip in itself getting to 2000.
You know, it's interesting. Okay, I'm going off topic a little bit, but I sort of feel like, what if Y2K is the reason why everyone is so obsessed with movies like The Purge or Zombies, because we have this residual apocalypse trauma. Everyone thought the world was going to die, and now we're like obsessed with apocalypse media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe.
It's one of those things that have been going on for a while because of Bible predictions. You know, it was just...
But they're always off.
Yeah, and this one was too. It was like more so, it was like the ending of an entire freaking century.
I think we were just transitioning. I think that people took it the wrong way. I think we were transitioning into like this, you know, like we're millennials now, right? Mm-hmm. That was never really a thing when we're growing up. We didn't think we were going to be millennials, you know? So I think that it was just like that whole transition and like, it's so weird for me being a Christian. Like, I kind of knew the world wasn't ending because I'm like, all this stuff in Revelations has not happened yet.
I don't know. The Christian state be saying the world's going to end all the time. Like,
no, because they do egg math.
No, it's because they want to... People are just egotistical. They want to be around when the world's going to end. It's not ending on your watch, sir.
Right. Yeah.
All right? Go to Chick-fil-A.
2K was one of those things. And being 12 years old, turning to a teenager at that time and dealing with that plus immigration on top, it was kind of a heavy responsibility because that was like my father and I was a young man mimicking and learning from him. And one of the main things I learned was culture from him.
Yeah.
So it was like immigration was part of that learning from culture, even though it wasn't my culture per se.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration was learning other people's cultures, getting to have an understanding who they were, where they from, what their backgrounds were, what are they sensitive to, what kind of things are they dealing with.
Yeah.
And a lot of time it was language barrier. Me being a young Black Hispanic, like back then, no one even said Afro-Latino, which
I was about to say that. Do you acknowledge that? I see that now that everybody's like, kind of like, oh, I'm Afro-Latina.
And it's still looked down upon really hard.
I think that people, like, just say it, kind of, but, like, it's like, are you really was it something, do you acknowledge that
now? I acknowledge it. It's just like anything else, people can use the term in good or bad ways. More frequently, people are trying to get out the term because it's a way to divide Black people. And when I was growing up, it was more of being proud of the culture because a lot of Hispanics who are Black,
yeah,
when I was being raised, they would never use that term because there was no sense of pride being a Black Hispanic. It was either you look Hispanic enough to be Hispanic or you Black.
Yeah.
And if you use an Afro-Latino, it was like, it just wasn't used. It would seem something that was more dividing, and it was crazy. Back then, that term was not used.
But you know what's so crazy? That I've kind of like my wheels have been spinning about it. I see a lot of people, because I'm very much into YouTube culture, and yeah, you know, I'm very much into like reality TV. I see people who aren't necessarily Afro-Latina or Afro-Latino, and they kind of use it as a pass to use the N-word, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I see that a lot. I see it in music all the time. Like, it's that debate with Cardi B is like, Shane Black, why is she using that term? But once you learn the history of the diaspora and learn that boats came from Africa and just landed all over, you understand that this person may be more tan than you, may lighter, but their history is rooted just like yours. Their ancestors came from Africa as slaves, and, you know, they have to go through a little struggle, and it's still a struggle for them in their countries because compared to their country, they're considered the Black of their country.
Yeah.
And I saw a meme on that actually the other day. It was saying how basically every other race was called the N-word except for white people. So it's like if you're Indian, Hispanic, no matter what that particular race is, you were called that. It's just that Blacks were
taking air word.
It just was just like used to the highest level, but Asians, all of them.
Yeah, and even like it's, and me and Kenya had this conversation because it's like Jewish people, Asian people, we've all been oppressed in some type of sense by, I don't want to say the white man, but like by whatever. We've been oppressed in some type of sense. So, you know, like sometimes I kind of get fishy about the Afro-Latina thing because I'm just like, you know, is this your past use the N-word or is it just who you are?
I think that's a small part of it that comes out.
It is.
In media, you know, because like whatever.
Like in regular life, we wouldn't be worried about it. And the N-word for me, like to be honest with y'all, like, I mean, we're all here, like we're all different cultures. But like for me, people think this is bad, but I like the fact that Black people took the N-word back. And it's just like, what's up, my nigga? Like, you know what I'm saying? My nigga, tell me what's up.
That goes back to our history because it's like we were forced to take whatever we can get.
Yeah.
So we can turn little nuggets into pieces of gold
because
we've been forced to take the little bit of scraps we're given and make something astonishing. And that's repeated in history. No matter how far you look back history. That's what we've been doing. You can look back to present time. That's what we're still doing.
Yeah.
So it's like we've learned to take things that were not meant to be the best, but the lowest. We reshape it and make it something very valuable.
Even with food.
That's part of it.
Like, y'all wasn't making collard greens. Y'all wasn't eating pig feet. Y'all wasn't having ham hocks. Y'all gave us the scraps and we made it into a whole genre. You know what I'm saying? Like,
So
we are persistent people. But so, yeah, let's get back to, you know, as a child, like, how was it seeing your dad be deported?
Oh, man. Immigration was something was a part of me. It was like instilled in who I was
because
I lived on Virginia Road and 30th, right between 31st. And that was basically, that was pretty much Little Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a very cultural value for Black immigrants in that area. So for me, it was like we had people from El Salvador across the street. Mm-hmm. We had people from Belize right down the corner who were my godparents. We had Panamanians, we had Mexicans, we had
Hondurans. But was there ever, like, did you ever feel like as a kid there was a threat? You felt like, oh, like we could pot, like my dad could be gone? Or
Yeah, that was always on my mind. And immigration is something I learned at an early age because back then they didn't have ICE, they had INS. I think it was Immigration Natural Services. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that was the equivalent of ICE back then. So it was always on the back of my mind, like, I got to protect my dad if I want to see him.
Yeah.
It was always that responsibility of, like, making sure my dad was here good because he can be gone in any second.
Yeah.
So that's something I was very conscious already at, like, 11, 10, 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And growing up in L.A., like, it taught me to, like, navigate myself because being Afro-Latino back then,
mm-hmm.
people didn't expect you to know Spanish when you're black.
Yeah.
But for me, that was, like, a central part of my culture, because that's what my dad brought back from Panama,
mm-hmm.
is that Spanish. So for me, it was always navigating through two worlds of languages, English and Spanish,
mm-hmm.
in L.A., because Spanish is dominant in L.A. You'll hear it all the time. Yeah. It's like the unofficial second language, which originally the first language was Spanish in L.A.
Yeah, when it's Los Angeles.
Yeah, so Los Angeles. So
yeah.
So like, that navigating when I was younger, I was always conscious of things, but I never really had direction, a sense of, oh, I'm trying to imitate someone, or this is something to be proud of. No, it wasn't about loving the culture or glorifying. It was about, these were survivor skills.
So did you ever feel like you had to be like more black or more like, you know, like more towards your dad's side? Like, did you ever feel like torn?
Yeah. Cause
like we shared the thing that we're both Creole.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know about Creole culture. They don't get the stuff we get. But did you ever feel like you were torn between
always.
Races?
I always was, because when I was younger, that question came up. Wait, are you black? Are you white? Are you Spanish?
Don't you hate that question? Like, what
yes.
are you?
Yes. I remember the census.
What
the
are
census
you?
Just say African American. Not Hispanic. Hispanic of Latin American
yeah.
descent. I'm like, oh, I hate these questions.
But I'm like, I'd be like, I'm not specifying. Y'all, when I show up and you see.
But the
who
thing
you
was,
see.
Back then, it was about conforming and it was trying to fit in. That's
yeah.
what was the hardest part back then. Like, it was hard for me to say, yo, I'm Afro-Latino, black Panamanian
yeah.
from L.A. It was hard saying that because it was all about conformation and conforming back then and finding a group that you fit in. And it was hard for me because, like, it was black and Hispanic.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it was African-American and Mexican.
Yeah.
And so for me, I had to navigate knowing I know both cultures,
yeah.
but acting like I belong to one. And it was sometimes, like, hiding my true identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it came down to.
Yeah, I think
for
yeah.
me that was never really an option because obviously I'm black. You can't tell through the podcast, but
Kitty is Nigerian.
But I mean, it was always weird to bring Nigerian because like I don't really identify with anything other. It's, like I don't identify that much with Nigerian because I'm like I know a little bit about it, but I get it. So I was always just me. So that, I mean that's interesting as far as like thinking about what that was a really weird time. I think one thing that I took away from it was understanding just how weird America is. Like,
yeah.
For me, it was just like, oh, you're
if
like,
you don't
you have
look a certain
American.
Way, you're gonna get that thing. And I used, like, I think that I can relate with Tony. I talked about it on Flanagan Forum, my uncle's podcast. What's up, Uncle Sean? But we talked about me having that issue of people asking me like what I am, and you know, like always just questioning my identity or like. You know, like, what are you? And it's just like, I really shouldn't have to explain to you
yeah.
what I am. You feel like you shouldn't have to. Like, well, let me just be myself. Like, I know what I am. I know my culture. But, like, if I sat down and broke it down to every person, I'd be sitting up here having conversations all day about
yeah.
my identity. It doesn't matter. I'm human, you know?
Yeah, back then, too, for me, it was like, I didn't know how to really put into words and explain because it's like...
Young.
Why would I explain who I am? Why would I have to?
Exactly.
But it came down to the point where it's like I was in conflict who I was because there was no representation of who I was. There was no teaching of who I was.
Yes.
Everyone just told me you're not black. I got my whole life, even still today in Dumpton.
What?
But I mean, I get what people are saying. Well, I told him he's not black
because there's certain things that, like...
Are they saying black and African are two exclusive things?
Well, okay.
They just mean, like, there's different pockets of black culture, and when you don't fit into those, people always kind of think, you know, like, oh, you're not black. Especially, like, me, like,
yeah.
I didn't grow up around a bunch of black people or anything like that, except for obviously my parents. It's not even that.
It's two Nigerian parents raising him, right?
Yeah.
So... Like me, I have a whole black Creole mama. So like certain things he doesn't resonate with, or like I'll say certain stuff like, what is it now?
No, but like, for me, I just grew up liking it, and now it's like my superpower. I'm just like, I'm not any of those things. I'm really not. There's only one.
You're just a Nigerian American.
I don't fit into this category. I don't fit into Nigerian American. I don't fit into African American. I don't fit into
that's diaspora, obviously, right? White.
So it's just like
it's new identities.
I got really comfortable just being like, I am super duper different,
and I'm glad, man, because that's what made me comfortable being who I am, seeing people comfortable in their skin. Because it took me a while. I was 13 years old when my dad got deported. I remember February 2nd, 2002.
Yeah, take us through that day.
I remember my dad being detained months before my 13th birthday, February 2nd, 2002. And that was literally like right after 9/11, September 2011, when immigration was going through all these changes. That's just like right before Homeland Security happened, which we know as Department of Homeland Security, which is immigration now. This is like when it was being, the talks of being formed and before it even came into play. So for me, my dad being deported right around that time after 9/11, but before the change in the immigration administration, it was also an internal change for me. Figuring out who I am and who I'm becoming. And that's a very hard year for me. Cause,
did you ever think it was your dad's fault?
Yeah. Because for me, it was like, my dad is Hispanic part. My mom is from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, dang, if it wasn't my dad, I wouldn't be Hispanic. And it was hard because it was like...
That's a weird thing to say.
It was.
You wouldn't be anything.
Exactly. True facts. But I looked at it from an angle of identity, and my own dad was like just going through this process of him getting ready to be deported back to his country of Panama. So in a way, it was forcing me to really look at myself and who I am. And it was like, wait, if this guy gave birth to me, this is my father.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying he doesn't belong here. Doesn't that mean half of me don't belong here as well?
So we're talking about that. How did your mom deal with it? Like, to explain to you? Was she able to, like...
Nah, she wasn't really able to explain it because she was also going through a process of changes. And California is super expensive, so...
Yeah.
Her having to do without that support, it was her struggling, trying to make sure she was making men's meat, making sure that I was still, you know, able to go to school... And through all of, you know, she found ways to really nurture me and make sure I was good. But I could see it. Mm-hmm. It's only so much she can hide from me.
So were they married?
No.
Oh, they were just together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was weird. They were like night and day, two different people. My mom is...
I met your mom at the hospital, and I was just like, oh, she...
She's very articulate.
Yeah.
Set.
Beautiful, nice woman.
Thank you. She's set in stone. She planned things. My dad is the opposite. He's like, let's get up and have an adventure. Let's go. He don't plan stuff out. So it was like, they were just two different worlds, but I learned from both of them growing up in South Central LA around that time. So 2002 is literally when I was forced out of Los Angeles, LA to Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I moved around a little bit in Dallas from like DeSoto, Cedar Hill, suburbs. To the hoods of Duncanville.
That's what we have in common, because I'm from Grand Prairie.
Oh, snap.
Yes, I'm a Grand Prairie girl. I used to be in DeSoto, Arlington.
I used to take the I-20 because I went to...
I saw your diploma. I was like, this nigga went to Arlington.
I went to UT Arlington.
I was asking your wife, I was like, were you there when Drake came to...
I was already gone.
You were gone already?
But I did see Lupe Fiasco there.
You saw?
I saw Lupe.
You know when Drake was dating that girl who was up playing, her name was like Duffy or something like that?
You mean Hillary Duff?
No. She's a black girl. She played on the University of Arlington basketball team. Oh, and he came out there, and I was at Texas State at the time, and people were like, snap, you need to get back home. Drake is at a whole basketball game. Oh, snap. A free one. I was just like, oh my gosh, it was so crazy.
But, Drake get popped up.
He was getting caught up. But yeah, so that's interesting. So do you think that... what was the feelings after your dad was deported? Like, how did you deal with it?
Oh, my gosh. I think that was the opening routes to my travel identity, because I felt like because my dad couldn't travel, yeah, I had to.
Yeah.
So, for me, it was like, I was literally in high school, and I moved to Texas. And I remember one of the first classes having in Texas at DeSoto High, mm-hmm, was freaking geography. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was more interested in the course than the teacher was. Because he would bring these videos. I'm like, nah, I want to learn about geography, different places, how to get to these places. And I literally used to tell him I was the one advocating for studying when the entire class just wanted to watch a movie.
The bell rings. You're like, actually, Mr. Duncan, I need you to go a little bit deeper into your...
I got a story about that, actually.
Tell it.
Tony, shut up.
Lunch. Damn it.
Get out of here. We watched the video. That's good.
Nah, man. I got a story for days, y'all. In elementary school, me and my Salvadoran homeboy stayed after school, mm-hmm, because the geography teacher was showing us stuff around the world, and I was just so obsessed. I kept learning and asking him questions. Mm-hmm. And then my mom and my homeboy's mom, my Salvadoran homeboy mom, Danny, they called the police because they were like, wait, they didn't come home. Something must happen. So the freaking police was at the school looking for us because they thought something happened.
Oh, y'all stayed after.
Because we stayed, yeah.
He's like, look, I'm trying to get my education. Right.
It was crazy. But that's how it was in South Central LA.
No,
it was a community. Every family was like looking out for each other. It was a community, so I'll definitely put that. But after my dad was deported, it kind of like just disintegrated. And I just was pushed out, and that's how I ended up in Texas.
So
2002.
So how's your relationship with your dad now?
It's good. It's good. He always hit me up on WhatsApp. We communicate on Facebook. And it's crazy because my wife, mm-hmm, family, known my dad family before me and my wife even known each other.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so interconnected. Like when I go to Panama.
That's a God thing.
Yeah. We go to Panama, like, I literally run into my family by just hanging out with my wife family.
Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't know y'all knew my family. That's crazy.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is so cool. All right. So your dad gets deported. So did you feel like you had to be like the man of the house, or like how did that...
Oh, man. That was kind of, yeah. But I knew in South Central LA, it's like, you got to be very careful how you tread, because being raised in South Central LA, you don't have no filter. You get to see the good and the bad. So me growing up, I knew I had to maneuver in a very particular way. Mm-hmm. So it just became about travel, education, and me educating myself the best I can. Not based on school standards, but knowing it was just driving me and finding my identity. So it went way beyond just like school and standards compared to my peers. It was like something that was instilled in my entire identity that I was building at that moment.
Yeah, I think that's dope too, because I think sometimes like we push like education on kids, right? But it's like, if we can find what they're passionate about, you know, it really like propels them to like want to like learn more. Like, you're staying after school to talk to your geography teacher because you want to know about travel. So I think that that's a good thing. And you have two young kids, and is that something you want to like instill in them?
Definitely, because I learned so many things through traveling that I don't think I would have learned anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a central part of them growing up, and that's why we travel with the kids, so they can at least experience that at a young age.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you, so you said you grew up in like South Central LA?
South Central LA.
Okay, so we've seen, unfortunately, that Nipsey Hussle passed away at the Marathon clothing thing.
Yeah, on Crenshaw's loss.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that? It's kind of a hard thing, because it's like, you want to give back to the hood, right?
Yeah.
To where you were raised, but it's like, you also got to like protect yourself, protect your peace, protect your energy, because everybody's not like for you. So how did that hit you? Because I know you from there,
area. That hit me in a crazy way, because it was like the person helping people grow was destroyed in his own neighborhood. It made me realize that sometimes people aren't appreciative of what they have. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it'll take something like that for them to really recognize and appreciate it.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have to be that way. People should be able to appreciate things while it's there, while they can see it, while they can touch it, while they can give flowers, while they can give, you know, compliments
while they're alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
So for me, it was like learning that not everybody deserves your energy. Mm-hmm. There has to be some type of boundary. And just learning that you can't be too good of a person where people don't deserve you. Yeah. So that made me realize, like, you can give back.
I like that. Yeah, you, I like that.
You can give back, but you just have to be careful where you trade.
You can give back at a distance, too. You don't always have to be, like, in the mix. You know what I'm saying? I think that maybe he was just too in the mix and got too comfortable. Because people are envious. They're jealous. And people don't know. People will be blind.
But that's what made him. That's what made him who he is. He was for the people. So it was like, you can see, you can touch.
Yeah.
That's what made him so powerful, because it was somebody who was there in the community. You can literally see face to face and touch him.
Yeah.
I think that's what made him such a powerful figure. And in LA, unfortunately, like, we're still learning how to appreciate things. And I just learned it from just being younger. Like, sometimes we come from a place of good people, but it's also a crazy place where it has crazy people as well. South Central's like that.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard LA described kind of like that, like a place of stuff.
Well, he's from you're from Antelope Valley?
Oakland?
Yeah,
born in Oakland, lived in Antelope Valley for 7 years.
We're not sure if Antelope Valley is real or not.
It's real.
that's a really interesting way to look at LA, like, thinking about, because it's so advanced in a few different ways, but it's interesting to think about the ways in which it is stunted. And you saying, like, you know, we're learning to appreciate things.
Yo, this is South Central LA. LA is big.
Yeah.
And people get this idea of LA being this superstar place for Hollywood, which it is. But LA is also real.
You can turn a corner and turn a corner and be in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that but it's like that here too sometimes, you know, in Texas. But in LA, it's even more. Like, I can be in Baldwin Hills, take a couple of rights, and end up in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah. Kendrick Lamar's neighborhood, like, literally called the jungle, which is really right there near Baldwin Hills. But it has a lot to do with the social conditions and also the gang culture. That's what's so big.
I was going to ask you that. Were you ever, like, tempted to, like...
Nah. When you grow up around it, you can see, like, the gang culture is not fun. It has harsh realities. One big movie that touched upon that is South Central with OG Bobby Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
It touches upon, like, the gang culture. It may seem fun and cool in a moment, but it has consequences. Have you ever seen the movie South Central?
I haven't seen it, but I get the mentality, because it makes you seem like you have this, like, group of people who are, like, looking out for you. But, like, at the end of the day, like, they make you do crazy stuff. You know, like, just it's almost like, when you think about some, like, people are going to come from my edges. But, you know, like, sororities and fraternities. Like, you have to do certain stuff. Like, you have to pay a bunch of money, like, for friends and to do this and get hazed and do all that stuff. And that's not for every sorority. So, if y'all come from my edges, guess what? They're still going to be here. Baby girl, watch still going to use castor oil on my edges. So stop. But I'm just saying, it's the same type of mentality. It makes you think that you have this other family that's looking out for you, but they'll put you out there. You see, Tekashi is in a bad situation.
Yeah, Tekashi69,
What do you think about that? I think it was so stupid that you think that you can join the Bloods without being initiated, and he goes, it's all Gucci.
Well, Nipsey also said, he said, you can't ever leave. Once you join, you're part of it forever. He even said it, and it's like, that's a part of being a part of it. Always claiming it. And it was like something he couldn't escape.
Yeah.
And even he knew it was like, gang culture is nothing you can... Once you join, it's hard to get out. Some people get out when they're older. Some people get out in jail. But it's hard to get out alive.
I just don't think that... I just just thought it was so weird that he thought that it, like, hey, yo, you want to come be a part of the Bloods? Oh, nah, you ain't got to kill nobody, initiate, not, we're good. We're just going to, like, what was, I just feel like he was just, like, young and dumb. Like, he just didn't understand what was happening. Like, nobody propositions you into a gang without being initiated. Like,
sure, but everyone has a purpose. And
yeah.
During him being in the gang, he found his purpose where he was, like, a peace mediator
mm-hmm.
in there. Because he had YG, who's from Blood Gang.
Yeah.
He had people from sure. Crip Gangs. Even Snoop Dogg really praises him because he pretty much brought people together on a more central level to let them know, wait, we may be gangs that are divided gang-wise,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, we're going through the same struggle as black people. And that he was like the Marcus Garvey of the hood.
Yeah.
He uses gang stature, his music, and just his charm to really get people to come together regardless of what gang or what city you're from. Because in L.A., there's a lot of conflict on where you're from and which gang you are.
Yeah.
And it becomes divisive. But he was like, he found a way through that and navigate through that. And I think that's why people, you know, praise him to this day. Because I don't want to say he ended gang culture because it's still there. But he changed the way he's looked upon to where people from different gangs come together, work together, and build together.
Yeah.
He was very central to that. I think
he was trying to build that before.
Yeah, he definitely was. He got
caught up in the case. Like, he was building. I mean, he was...
talking about Tekashi, but he's talking about Nipsey also.
Oh.
I'm talking about Nipsey, but with Tekashi 6ix9ine, he just got...
No, but Tekashi's working with Crips?
He is, but Tekashi 6ix9ine is more of like... I feel like more for the show.
But he's a troll.
Yeah, he's a troll, and he was like... He has some gain to make. Compared to Nipsey, Nipsey really was in it for the heart. And he knew the consequence. He was smart. Oh, yeah. Tekashi 6ix9ine is kind of like winging it, trying to get what he can on the go with it. Yeah, because he put himself in dangerous spots.
The dummy's guide to being a Blood.
Right.
He put himself in some serious situations.
No, he did. And he really thought he was untouchable, but they didn't touch him.
Chicken soup for the Blood Soul.
Yeah, I think Tekashi 6ix9ine is more of like, he's like a commercial spokesperson who's getting all the benefits of it. And he's going through the process of it because it's real, but he came in a part where he got like all the gold out of it, where he was able to monetize off of it. And now the real life consequences are catching up with him.
Yeah.
It's like, no matter how much money,
his assets are seized.
It's like, you got all his fame, but now you got the tension up because the reality of the gang culture is you're part of this, and gang culture is not always pretty. It's associated with some heavy stuff that if you're saying you're part of, you're part of that stuff as well. So yeah. I just caught up with him.
Yeah. So, okay, we talked about immigration earlier, and I kind of want to end it out on that, too.
Okay.
So, we see a lot of stuff with the Trump administration, you know, putting people in detention camps. Hopefully I said that right.
You did it.
Detention. Detention camps. And with ICE, you know, taking, you know, people's parents, their siblings, everybody. What advice would you give to a younger Tony who's going through this right now in this day and age? Or anybody?
Advice for myself and me, just steady, pace yourself, continue doing what you're doing. To anybody, though, some generic information to how immigration is these days is like, don't take anything for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to protect everything from culture to language, because nowadays is very harsh and people are so nationalistic, meaning like they want to prove they're American that they'll forget their own background and history.
Yeah.
And when I was in El Paso, me and my wife saw Hispanic Trump supporters. It was like, wow, to see that in real life.
Yeah, and he has a video. There's a video on there. So, Tony, After we're done, plug all your stuff. Because Tony has some really good quality video. And Has just some amazing stuff. Him and his wife are amazing. But continue.
Oh, just the advice right now is just, you know, have trustworthy people around you.
Because
Right now we live in an age where it's a lot of hatred going on. So, have trustworthy people around you. Don't be ashamed of who you are. You know, represent. Be who you are. Be unapologetic about it.
Yeah.
And just know that, you know, sometimes it's going to get rough, especially in conservative red states like Texas, where there are always people that's willing to prove how American AR, even if it's at the expense of
their own culture.
Their own culture and then forgetting their own history, or just doing crazy stuff like calling ICE on parents.
Yeah.
Over a misunderstanding in school. So we're living day and age now where people are not afraid to be bigots, racist.
Yeah.
So we're in an age where for me it's like I want to let people know I'm not with racism, and you can't be neutral at the time like this. So yeah. It's all based on your actions. Your actions dictate who you are, what you do. So
yeah.
I'm for the fight. I'm for the people who keep families together. I'm for immigration. I'm for people to better themselves. So I'm always supporting immigrants.
Yeah, and like what do you think about these borders that they're trying to put up? I don't think it's necessary.
It's not. It's old concepts because if you look through history, like a lot of borders are by nature.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of control just to show people who has power. Because if you look at histories and nations, a lot of it is about borders and who has political land over what other country or which land is more recognized.
Yeah.
It's all man-made. And if you look at the history of just borders, there really is no borders. A lot of it is just man-made to kind of show their power.
Yeah, like kind of like almost like I feel like it's an ego thing. It's just it like, is. Oh yeah, you know, like I want to keep out that. I'm just like, it's stupid, but
it is.
I'm so happy we got to come talk to Antonio Polanco.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Appreciate that, y'all.
This man is such a fighter, such a warrior, such a good friend of ours, and we appreciate him. We love him and his family, and I hope y'all enjoy this podcast. I'm sure we'll do another one again. So it's Danielle Victoria signing out. Antonio, tell him about all your social medias right now.
Oh, we got the number one itinerary, THE hashtag number one. ITINERARY, the number one itinerary.
Yes, with the spelling, because I would have been lost.
Yeah, you spell exactly like that. It'll pop up on Google, YouTube. You travel one-stop shop. You know, you get to travel blogs, travel tips,
the books, videos. Yeah, books out.
We got an ebook about U.S. citizens traveling into Cuba and how to do it the legal way. So yeah, check us out. That is on Amazon. We also got Airport Hacks by MVP Madeline Vasquez Polanco.
Mm-hmm.
We got the freaking production company, MMP Productions.
You yes, can go, all MMP. My friends are CEOs.
That's coming out soon with Kenya and Tony. MMP Productions, based out of New York City, now in San Antonio. It's a production company. You just put it mmpproductions.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Google. We're on Facebook. So yeah, check us out. Tony Polanco, Antonio Polanco. She took it way back.
Antonio Polanco.
Appreciate that, Danielle. Appreciate it, Kenyo, Mr. Yes. Composition.
Thank you, Kenyo, for not really co-hosting.
Yeah, you know what? I love to sometimes provide presence and absence. So
but
I'll let y'all think about that.
But thank you, Mr. Composition, for the side notes. Thank you, Antonio. We appreciate you. Thank you, Madeline. She's with the baby. And thank you for listening to Hashtag Goals. If you want to hit me up, it's Danielle Victoria on Facebook, Danny Vic on Instagram and Snapchat. Kenyo, do you want to give your stuff?
Kenyo HQ on everything. And then you can get Hashtag Goals at Hashtag Goals XO on Instagram and Facebook. And you can listen to it on all of your podcasting apps. And please do so.
Yes, and give us some reviews. We love you guys. Bye.
Hey. No, you. Yeah, you. Would you mind subscribing to our podcast? It's just like you're listening to it anyway. Yeah, super, super easy. Doesn't have to be awkward or anything. Thank you.